And joining me right now here on a Monday to kick off the week and go over the latest on the Orlando Magic. Game 5, that's right, coming up Tuesday night there in Cleveland with the series tied 2-2 apiece. This guy does a great job covering the Magic. He's my good friend, Philip Rossman-Reich with Orlando Magic Daily. Philip, how you doing today?
I am doing good. It feels like the calm before the storm right now.
You're not joking around. I won't lie to you. After Game 2, you and me discussed this. I did not know what to think of this team. I was almost going to put a fork in them, and all of a sudden they got home cooking. So I'll give it to you. What happened in Game 3 and 4 to even up this series?
I mean, home cooking is probably the best way to describe it. Orlando came home and just kind of felt like they were themselves again. You know, they played much looser and much freer. The crowd energy, you know, kind of hyped them up and got them just relaxed and more comfortable. And I think, you know, I think when we look back at games 1 and 2, you know, it's not that the Magic did everything poorly. Like, they lost those games pretty heavily, but, you know, their defense was hanging tough. They seemed to make some shots, and that seemed to be the confidence that the team had heading into games 3 and 4. Well, they finally made some shots, and we saw what this team could look like. And so it just looks like the pressure of the playoffs and the newness of the postseason kind of finally wore off. They finally got comfortable, and they showed us what they look like when they're able to execute their stuff and play with some freedom.
The stat of Cleveland's not scored 100 points. I still don't believe it when I say it out loud. What adjustments have the Magic made, especially game 3 and 4, on defense to shut down Cleveland?
Yeah, I mean, I think the obvious one is they put Wendell Carter back into the starting lineup. You know, there's definitely a good idea in putting Jonathan Isaac in that starting lineup to try and spread the floor a little bit and use his defense against the Cavs. But Jared Allen was just able to muscle him around, and every time that Isaac had to step up for a block, it doesn't have the instincts as a center to stay connected to the roller and stay connected for rebounds. And Allen was able to kind of gobble him up. So putting him back on the bench and starting Wendell Carter, who has a lot of those instincts and is really good at that kind of positioning, really, really freed this team up. You know, you look at Jared Allen's rebounding. He was like 18 rebounds in game 1, 20 rebounds in game 2. He had only, I believe, 8 in game 3. Yeah. You know, again, another like 8 or 9 in game 4. That's a really good job. And that, you know, that changes your whole dynamic, because now when you get a stop, you get a rebound, you can get out and transition a little bit. You can get into your offense before Cleveland can set its defense. And even just from that, like watching game 3, Wendell Carter only had, I think, 4 or 5 rebounds in that game. But every time a shot went up, he turned around and made sure he put like a little cross check on Jared Allen to deter him from even attacking the offensive glass. Something little like that changes everything in the series, changes everything in the way that he attacks and the way that this Magic team can defend. And so I think that was the biggest change. You know, there's obviously some other things, but the Magic's defense was playing really well in Cleveland. Now they kind of made sure that they cleaned up the rough parts there, and then they got some offense, to be perfectly frank.
We're here with Philip Rossman-Reich, Orlando Magic Daily. All right, Philip has been to pretty much every game. Explain game 4 in the third quarter when the Magic outscored Cleveland. It was 37-10. What happened exactly?
I mean, it's hard. I'm still trying to figure out exactly what happened, because, you know, it's not like the Magic did anything crazy different. Like, they defended at the level they usually defend at. They didn't turn the ball over, which was the big problem in the first half of game 4.
Yeah.
They made shots. I mean, they were 4 for 6 from 3. They hit their baskets. Franz Wagner took over. Like, he found a seam and just kept attacking it, and Cleveland couldn't figure out how to slow him down. And you could just see that confidence building in him, because he's starting to hit kind of the step back and pull up threes that he was hitting last year that he was missing so much this season. It was just kind of a perfect storm. And you know, I've kind of come to believe that the defining image of this series is going to be that moment when Darius Garland tried to get into Jalen Suggs' chest and they had to be separated. And Jalen Suggs is just smiling the entire time and is just laughing and just, you know, like enjoying that moment and not backing down. To me, that like defines who this Magic team is and what this Magic team has done this series. And Cleveland kind of didn't respond the way that they needed to the physicality that the Magic played with and to the energy in that crowd. Now, Orlando's going to have to bring that energy on the road. It's much more difficult to do that when you're away from the Kia Center. But Orlando really seemed like they found that joy that maybe they were missing in games 1 and 2 that's so important to the way this team plays.
Did Franz Wagner, who, yes, he outscored Cleveland in that third quarter by himself, 12-10. I was there. It was shocking. I think he hit the first, like, three buckets in a row. A bunch of drives, a three. Did he look like a superstar in the making, him out there on the court?
I mean, the guy scored 34 points in a playoff game and just did everything for the team. He had 23 in the second half, and you know, people forget this. He had 9 in the first quarter too. Like, it was a solid deluge the whole game, where he was just scoring and scoring and scoring. Look, we've been waiting for this Franz Wagner to show up all year. You know, he struggled with this 3-point shot for whatever reason. None of us can really figure out why, but he's been an excellent driver and an excellent attacker all season long. And he was able to get to his spots. He was able to kind of mix up his speed, hit some mid-range jumpers, which he rarely does, which he even rarely takes mid-range jumpers. He makes them, but he rarely takes them. He was able to kind of keep the Cavs off balance and get to his spots. And the Magic really figured out something on how to attack these two bigs and how to attack these lineups that they didn't have in game 1 and 2. And Cleveland's got to figure it out, and they haven't had any answers yet.
Is that the best he's played since he had the ankle injury against the Bulls a couple weeks ago?
Ooh, that is, well, I mean, I would say so. Certainly since the Bulls game. I was thinking you're thinking about the Kings game, but yeah, that was certainly the best that he's played since the Bulls game. Just, you know, he's looked fine. It's just he sometimes, you know, the shot isn't there. The three-point shooting hasn't been there. And, like, he's taken some turns on Donovan Mitchell. He's playing some excellent defense on top of this. You know, Franz is very quietly one of the better young two-way players in the league. You know, no one kind of talks about him that way, but, you know, he's been solid for the team all year long. It's, you know, I think the ultimate question in his development is whether he's a star player at the end of the day. And, you know, that might just be dependent on team success at the end.
Phil Rosenreich, is his brother Mo Wagner becoming a fan favorite at the Kia Center?
I mean, Mo Wagner's been a fan favorite at the Kia Center for a long time now. Like, he's just, you know, like, we talk about this team needing energy and that they're energy is, like, so much of what defines them. Like, people kind of peg this team as a team that just tries harder than you every time on the floor. That, you know, that's Mo Wagner's role. That's what he does. And, you know, that's what this team needs, you know. So he plays his role perfectly. Like, he knows exactly what he's on the court to do, and he really doesn't do much more than that. And that's the best compliment you can give a role player like him.
Your seat for press row is like behind the basket for our listeners. Was it on your side of the floor when Mo Wagner did that hammer dunk?
I don't think it was. Maybe it was the second half. Maybe it was, you know, the plays, you know, he's done a lot of those. Like, he's had a lot of good dunks this year. Like, it's not surprising to see him come flying down the lane and uncork a one-handed dunk like that. That is very much in his game, and he's looking to eat up that space if you can get him on the roll. Like, he's just such an excellent pick and roll player. You know, he's got good hands to catch those pocket passes, and he's tough on the post. Like, you know, people, I think, pin him as a certain type of player, and that's not really what he is, because, you know, he had that, you know, honestly, the play that I remember from Mo is the post up he had on Evan Mobley when he just kind of up and undered him and just kept pivoting and pump faking until he finally got some space to throw it over him. And he's shooting like 67, he shot like 60-70% from inside the paint. Like, he's a machine on the block as much as anything, and it's great to watch.
We're here at Phil Rosenreich, Orlando Magic Daily. I just want to go over this real quick with Mo Wagner. So post game, he kind of made this comment, and it really stood out to me. You were there as well, where he's like, you know, it's kind of interesting playing the same team 4 times in a week. You know, we're not used to that. He has it. No one has. They're really getting that experience. Did you notice that when Mo said that post game?
Yeah, I mean, they've kind of talked about this all series. You know, they played this team 4 times during the regular season. They actually played them once in the preseason too. So they've seen a lot of each other. Now, they hadn't seen each other since February, but, like, this is what a playoff series is. Like, I remember I was up in Cleveland talking to some Cavs reporters in game 2, and I was, like, kind of breaking down what I saw in the series, and they're like, wow, like, you have your scouting report done on this team and everything. Like, I couldn't have said it better myself. Like, that's the thing about playoff series. Like, you learn everything about your opponent. I've joked with a few people, like, our press conferences with the coaches are getting much shorter now that we're getting deeper into the series, because it's like, we know what the battle lines are. We know what's going to determine these games and what the team has to do to win. And obviously it's a little bit different each time, but, like, the big X factor in this series, I think we said this at the beginning of the series, was going to be the Magic shooting. When they missed shots in games one and two, they lost. When they made shots in games three and four, they won. There's obviously more to it, but we can kind of already sense, like, okay, if the Magic keep Jared Allen off the glass, they have a good chance to win. If they don't turn the ball over, they have a good chance to win. We can see these battle lines being drawn, and obviously we've done this four times now. It's not about, there are adjustments to make, but it's not really about adjustments. It's not really even about your opponent anymore. It's just about execution. You know what the game plan is. You know how to beat this team. It's just, can you do it over and over and over and over again to get the job done?
Okay, let's go to Paolo Banchero. He had an amazing game three, 30-plus points. He had 9 in game four. What happened, and what does that say about our team, the team, the Magic, moving forward?
Yeah, I think what happened was Cleveland adjusted. Like, they made a change in how they covered him. They brought a double team from his blind spot whenever he tried to back down a player in the mid-range. Mm. You know, they really sat on his spin move back to his right hand. And so Paolo really struggled with turnovers. He had 4 turnovers again in this game. And look, young players are going to struggle in their first playoff series. Like, this is how Paolo's struggles manifest themselves. He's had 19 turnovers in 4 games. That's going to be something he's going to have to clean up and learn how to improve as he plays more of these playoff series. But the thing I loved about Paolo is he understood pretty quickly he didn't have it. And he understood, like, okay, I'm not going to be able to get the same shots. I'm not going to be able to get the same looks that I got in game three. And so I have to figure out a way to still help my team. And I loved, what everyone said after the game, and I loved what Paolo said, was that, my job today was to be the decoy, was to eat up all the attention, get them to double me, and then pass it quickly to the next guy so he can attack that seam. And, that's one of the reasons why Franz was able to get downhill so much, is there was so much attention turned to Paolo that, he was able to get kickouts and get the defense moving and get the team moving too. So, one thing Paolo's learning, and I think he's, still struggling with this a little bit, is it's not always about your dribble moves. It's not always about, it's not always about kind of setting your man up. You got to make quicker decisions. And I think that's something this team got a lot better at in games three and four, and something Paolo got better at, but he still kind of falls back sometimes to trying to be a little bit too much of an isolation player. And that's what Cleveland wants in the end. He made his shots in game three, didn't make him in game four. I'm really proud that he found a way to help his team win.
Okay, real quick. You talk about shooting. How big was getting Cole Anthony, Markelle Fultz, even Gary Harris, Jalen Suggs, all those guards, how big was it for them to step up and make buckets for this team?
I mean, as Shaq always says, you win these games on the others. You look at it, when I look back at games one and game two and I look back at the tape, I felt like Paolo was making the right reads and making the right passes, especially early in the game. And when those guys miss shots early, you could see that trust decrease. It's not that, he doesn't trust his teammates, but all of a sudden now he's trying to make tighter passes or more difficult passes on the interior to try and get easier shots. He's still trying to find his teammates, but he's not kicking out to three because those shots aren't going in. He doesn't trust that shot. He trusts Mo Wagner running around the baseline or Franz trying to cut into traffic. The difficulty level of those passes increased because the easy passes weren't working, or the shots that we were getting off the easy passes weren't working. In games three and four, those easy passes worked. They got the threes that they needed. Cole Anthony looked refreshed. Markelle Fultz looked like Markelle Fultz in game four. So that's, yes, I think he's played honestly in months. You expect your bench players and you expect your role players to play a lot better at home. The question now is going to be, can they do it in Cleveland? Because for all we want to talk about the Magic having momentum and tying this game at 2-2, Orlando still needs to win a game in Cleveland. And that's the one thing they haven't proven they can do yet in this series.
Okay, if you're Jamal Mosley, who should have won Coach of the Year, but yes, he's the runner-up, still it's a great honor. How do you attack game five? Especially in games one and two, they came out so slow and they were just behind. How do you go into game five then?
Yeah, I mean, I think the idea that Jamal Mosley has is the correct one. Like, you have to treat this game like it's another game. Like, it's a big game, don't get me wrong, but you have to treat this game as if, okay, we know what we have to do. We know what success looks for us. We know the formula to beat this team. We just have to go out and execute. We just have to play with intensity, play with precision, play with detail, and do the things that this team has done all year long. At this point, you've got to trust the work that you put in since October, since September. You've got to trust all that work, and you know, you can't overhype things. You know, there's enough pressure being put on the team anyway. You know, the crowd's going to be another impediment and another hurdle you have to climb. But you got to trust what you're doing, and what you're doing is working. And that's all. You know, that was ultimately the message after games one and two. That has to still remain the message after game four, heading into this game. Is, you know, we made the tweaks, we made the adjustments, we know the game plan. Just have to trust yourself, trust your teammates, and go execute it. It's really nothing too complicated, nothing too hard, except it is the hardest thing that has to be done now.
All right, let's clarify this. Even though games three and four were turned into blowouts, didn't the Magic also have bad starts to the first quarter in game three and four as well?
They did. They were slow starts, but never like out of control. Like, you know, game three, the Magic made the Cavs call the first timeout. Like that's like the big thing coaches always say is make the other team call the first timeout. Now, the Magic won the first quarter in game three, I believe 31-21. They lost the first quarter in game four, but only by a point. So when I look at those starts, like, yes, it's not good to get off to like 6-0 starts or start 1-for-9 like they did in game three. But having said that, you just got to stay in the fight. Like it's the old golf tournament adage. You can't win a tournament in the first round, but you can lose it in the first round. And so really the Magic aren't, you know, the Cavs are a really good first quarter team. They've been a good first quarter team all year. The Magic have been a poor first quarter team. They've been a poor first quarter team all year. They make adjustments. They come out of the locker room on fire. They're one of the best third quarter teams in the league. This, you know, as they showed in game four. The Magic just have to stay in the fight. They have to take, especially on the road, they got to take that initial punch. They got to stand tall and come back at them. That's what this series has ultimately been about is which team can still stand after the other one lands a punch. You know, Orlando got staggered in games one and two. Cleveland fell to the ground. They were on the mat. They were getting counted. They were getting counted in games three and four. Game five is going to be very much the same. Which team's going to be able to withstand the run? Which team's going to be able to limit those runs, which team's going to be able to stand tall after a big flurry. That's what's going to decide this year.
Should you give the green light to Jonathan Isaac and Wendell Carter Jr., who both hit multiple three-pointers in game four?
Yeah, absolutely. Those are two of the Magic's best three-point shooters. You know, Wendell Carter shot 38-39% from three. Jonathan Isaac shot 37% from three. Essentially, the whole idea of starting Jonathan Isaac in games one and two was, he's a good three-point shooter. We can just we're just going to kind of pre-space him out to the three-point line to keep Jared Allen out of the paint and open up driving lanes. When Isaac missed all those threes, Jared Allen was like, I don't need to worry about Jonathan Isaac making threes. Carter and Isaac making threes and being threats from the outside are absolutely vital to the Magic winning game five. Like they will need both of them to hit a three, if not multiple threes, just to keep the defense honest. Because that, again, that's the big weakness for this team, and that part of Cleveland's strategy hasn't changed, even though Orlando hit some shots at home.
All right, let's end with this with Phil Rosenreich. How loud was that arena in game three and four?
It's the loudest I've heard it for a Magic game. Like it was definitely loud. It was pretty crazy.
It was insane. Win or lose tomorrow night, Tuesday night, how wild is Friday night going to be for game six?
Friday is going to be a party. It's going to be nervous. There's going to be a lot of nervous energy in there, but it's going to be a wild night at the Kia Center. You know, I'm sure everyone was hoping to just get three home games in this playoffs, because that either meant they're advancing or they got to a deep series. This fan base has really shown out and shown its appreciation and love for this team, and it's, you know, after a decade of being lost in the wilderness, it's been really fun to see this fan base embrace this group and really buy into everything that this group is about.
I agree with you, and it's the first time it kind of felt like, and I'll end with this with you, like these players, they get the love from the fans, and they're becoming celebrities here in Central Florida. Like if you're Jalen Suggs and you're Franz and Paolo and all the guys, I finally start to feel that where everyone's wearing their jerseys, Phillip, and people are cheering for them, and they're becoming like superstars. Do you feel that way?
Yeah, it's definitely getting there. Like, I don't know how out and about these guys are, but like the culture around this team, and this is a credit to the Magic as much as anything. There is a real like fan culture around this team again. Like there are idiosyncrasies. There are things that this fan base does and just things that are kind of universal throughout the whole the whole group here, it's been fun to see that passion come back. And yeah, like I've always said, Magic fandom was kind of dormant. Like this city wants the Magic to be good and wants to support a winning team. They're ready. They're ready to show up when the team is competing at higher levels. And, you know, I think different, you know, they got behind that 2019 team. There was a lot of appreciation, a lot of love for that run, but like, this is different. Like, this is a team that this is the first playoff run. This isn't the last. This isn't like an eight seed sneaking in. This is the first of, it feels like, a several year playoff run that I think a lot of people believe could end up in a title contender one day.
We will find out. Follow this guy on Twitter, Phil Rossenreich and Orlando Magic Daily, for coverage coming up Tuesday night with Game 5 there in Cleveland. My man, thanks for your help and good luck with your coverage moving forward.
I appreciate it, Mark. Thank you.